Welcome to the Marvel Cinematic University Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Canton III, and we are continuing our coverage of the Disney Plus animated series, X-Men 97, Episode 6. We are in the back half of the season, Life, Death, Part 2. And by the way, I have to say that this show, again, continues to amaze me in different ways every week. And this week was no different. Let's introduce the crew we have for tonight. First, the super producer, Jake Christie. Jake, how are you?
I'm doing well. Excited to be talking about something that's still good.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. And we have two guests tonight. Happy to have them. First, our pal from not only the Discord, but friend of the show. Her name is Cecilia Stokes. Cecilia, welcome back. How are you?
Yeah, Cecilia Alfonso Stokes. Oh, don't forget the maiden name.
Sorry. Hit him.
I'm going to throw in there. I'm doing great. Really excited to be talking to you guys again.
Wonderful. And a returning guest as well, Kevin Chukolate. He is a pop culture writer from A Tribe Called Geek. Kevin, welcome back to the program. How you doing, man?
Hello, doing good. Excited. It's just excited about X-Men and talking about it and everything. So, yeah, good to be here.
Yes, Kevin. So I'll lead off with you here because, as customary, when we have not had guests on the show for a particular series or movie or whatever the case may be on here, I would like to ask, what have they thought so far of this series? So in terms of X-Men 97, what have been your general thoughts thus far?
Oh, I've really enjoyed it. Like, I mean, I've loved it. Like, it's there's some parts that I think were pretty good, and then there's some parts that I think have been, like, amazing. Obviously, last week's episode was pretty just, for so many reasons, incredible. And then there's so many other parts that are just really good. I was going to watch this, even if it was just okay. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's honestly kind of what my expectation was. I was like, I feel like this is probably going to be a little bit tighter than the previous show. Because I've watched it, and some of it's not so great at rewatching at times, besides just throwing it on. I still like it, but... I didn't have super high expectations, and it's so far past what those were. I thought it was going to be fun, enjoyable, and pretty good, and maybe an episode or two that surprised me. But, yeah, it's been a great time every week just waiting to watch it.
Yeah, that's been the general consensus thus far. And, Cecilia, what about you? What have you thought of X-Men 97 to this point?
I have had such a nice time watching it. I've been watching it with my kids. And we have been, I didn't have the nostalgia. For a lot of reasons, I don't have this nostalgia factor attached to it. So we went into it a little blind, and, we have had the best time, and it is exciting. I mean, like, if you have kids, mine are 7 and 8, and I'll just kind of like, when something super cool is happening, I'll just look over at them and kind of get like their reactions or their facial expressions, and then I'll kind of look back, and
that's great.
It's been great. I love it.
Oh man. Yeah, and also, as we get into this episode, so this is a two-pronged episode again, where we're going back and forth between events. One, we have the storm, situation with the adversary and Forge, and then we also have the return, the surprising return of one Charles Xavier. And I have plenty of thoughts about Charles Xavier that we'll get into at some point here. But I want to start with Storm and her battling her inner demons as she tries to get past the adversary and, more importantly, past herself as she tries to get her powers back, which she succeeds in doing. Wonderful moment to see. Now, I think the first question, and Jake, I'll ask you, because we've talked a lot so far about how this series really moves. It's like really moving very, very quickly. How did you feel about the way that this part of the story of Storm moved, as has been customary for some folks to say that maybe this is going a little too quickly? Mm-hmm. I don't know. For me personally, I find the flow to be very good, and it feels very comic booky, so I don't mind it as much. But what say you on how this all came together?
So I would say the end of this storyline in this episode was the only time I felt it move too fast at all. I think the rest of it, I really liked the pace of it. I feel like it was a bit quick, and like, it was less actually the speed of it and more that the explanation was very dialogue based and like kind of abstract, as, and like, maybe I'm just being too literal, but I'm like, okay, but like, what actually is happening in regards to her getting her power back. It feels like they kind of yada yada that, which is like not the worst thing in the world. But you're at, since you're asking the question directly, that's my answer to the question. But I would prefer that than to the slog of like, and over five episodes, we see Storm slowly do something and something and something. It's like, no. We want her back in the action. We want her to, you know, overcome this thing. And like, we know that she's going to overcome it. And so like, I'm not particularly worried about, you know, the fact that it wraps it up quickly, because I know that it's doing that in service of getting Storm back on the board. And there's not, I think that thing that I think we've been talking about back when we're doing like the Netflix shows, that I think that the superhero shows, just especially the Netflix shows, just take way too long of like the the superhero losing their powers for like four episodes. And it's like, I don't want to watch Luke Cage hobbling around because he got shot with a bullet that can kill him. It's like, make that a one episode thing and get him back to, you know, like, it's like really just not fun to watch. And so, yeah, I think in the interest of this being entertaining, this is a cartoon that's ostensibly for children, even though I don't really know exactly. I mean, I guess Rosa is getting a lot out of it. So, so that's, I take that back. But I'm glad that she's back on the board. I'm glad that she was able to say her emotional catharsis, because ultimately that is, I think, a good lesson for all of us children, especially of like, you know, the real enemy you need to defeat is not anyone else. It's not society. It's what's inside you. You know, you need to get over your own issues. And that's a nice blessing.
Sometimes you need to look in the mirror when it comes to these things. Cecilia, what did you think of Storm's moment? Obviously, her getting her powers back was really cool. The transformation was a wonderful sight to see. The visuals were awesome, as per usual, with this show. What did you think of Storm's journey here?
I was so excited to see her come back. I think I interacted with people on the Discord a little bit about it, but I was like, I was happy to see that they expedited that storyline. I was really nervous when they took her powers away, like, I don't know, two episodes in. I was like, this better not be the thing for the rest of the, like, I was like, I don't know, reads a little racist to me, but we'll let this go for a second. And then seeing her come back with the whole outfit change, with the just incredible hair, ripping everything apart. It was awesome. I was super excited to see it. And it's maybe it's because of the animation, but the aesthetics of Storm specifically in the animated world they've created is, she's iconic, but she also is able to carry so much more gravitas than I think that maybe, or at least the live action versions we've seen so far can. And so the moment where she is able to kind of ascend and hit, you know, goddess queen status, was both narratively and aesthetically incredibly pleasing. So it was very exciting.
Yeah, there's something to be said for putting her in kind of that coffin, feeding into the claustrophobia that we've known her to have fear of in the past, and in the other animated series as well. That was a nice touch, but from her trying to fight through that, that was great to see. And Kevin, how about you in terms of Storm's journey? How that plays with Forge, who was kind of on the sidelines for a bit here, and how did you feel about how this storyline played out?
So, I agree with you guys to an extent. I think maybe I would have wanted just a little bit more if I was being like a little bit picky, like on two things. Some of it with her power, like I wouldn't have wanted, like you said, I don't want a whole season of Storm just crying and upset and not being able to see her as powerful as she is in that way. And so I'm glad I didn't do it to that degree. There's a part of me that's almost like, you know, maybe we could have pushed Motindo into like some kind of online exclusive later. And it was fun and cool, don't get me wrong, but like we could have put Life Death maybe like a whole episode and a half maybe, and like let it kind of cook a little more. Just so that for some people, I'm a huge Storm fan. She's one of my favorite, like maybe 3 to 5 X-Men. And for me, that's like a huge thing because I love X-Men. But like, and so I was excited. It looked really cool, but I kind of wonder if maybe some people are watching it, if they're just like, oh, okay. She kind of just, like you said, she yada yada. How did she, she just believed in herself. And it still was good. It's not like saying it wasn't good. There was just a small part of me that was like, man, I would have liked to hear a little bit more how some of that wrestling was a lot mixing it with kind of the Forge relationship, because I remember even reading, I was rereading through some of this comics time, which is only a few issues. So it wasn't like it was like 20 issues in the comics either necessarily. But yeah, I mean, I still enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. And I do think that they do an impressive amount of stuff in a small amount of time, because this could be rushed. If someone else told you that they were going to do all this in like half an episode, I would have thought there's no way and it would be rushed. I thought it visually was awesome. I thought they did some really cool scenes. That's the only thing that I think the aesthetic sometimes, there's some episodes it almost feels like very different at times. Almost like some of the earlier first three episodes or four episodes, I thought visually was pretty solid. But then like the last two, there's like some scenes that I'm like, oh, are these like, these are just some really awesome like scenes that I know episode one had, but
yeah, it feels like it's escalated a bit. I would say like last week with the Sentinels and Gambit and Rogue and Magneto.
It feels more like abstract and painterly as opposed to just like literalizing what's going on. Like especially the stuff with Storm internally. The thing I really liked about it is that like it leaned into the unreality of it. And like there was not like a logic to how everything was playing out. It felt like she was inside her own mind. And there's just some really cool like, it just was visually cool frames to look at. And like, that's such an obvious thing to say, but I think that that's something that they're clearly being intentional about. They're not just trying to put on screen what's in the script. They're trying to put it in a way that reflects the themes and the emotional journey of the characters.
Yeah. Even the music, they brought that music back from the first episode, that little piano thing, whenever she like went, Omega Mutant and all that stuff. They brought that back a little bit as she was coming up. I was like, I was getting hyped on that part.
Well, and I do think that, like, to the animation changes, I was paying more attention this week, like, the last couple of weeks, especially with the accelerated rate that we're at and with the action scenes taking on, like, a faster pace. I was paying more attention to the animation, and there are kind of larger gaps between frames. Like, the character will, there's a more of a distance that characters will travel, you know, in a certain motion, rather than it being kind of like close frames. They're getting a little spaced out. And I think that that works for me. And I was listening to some of the recent podcasts about how this is able to do the comic booksy thing. It feels more comic booky, where, you know, in comics, as you're reading them, it's called the gutter. So the line kind of between two different pictures, like the actual literal frames, but that are between pictures. It's called the gutter, and it is meant like as the reader, we are supposed to fill that part in. And I think that they were relying on that faculty, I guess, as with the recent kind of accelerated pace with the animation. And it, for someone who, as of recently, was just diagnosed with ADHD and whose brain works super fast, I appreciated it. I know. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
2 years ago for me.
And I appreciated it because I was kind of able, it was able to kind of keep up with the way that I was ingesting it. But it was making those connections between animation and comics for me even more salient.
I love it. It's, to me, like, when stuff is able to jump off the page or jump off the screen as it does, it just adds a whole new dimension to what the visual palettes are. And I think this is just another example of that continuing. And I think to Kevin's point, as far as the length of time spent with Storm and Forge here, I tend to probably agree. I like stories to kind of build. I'm a slow cooker guy. I don't mind if you take your time, and if you really want a good TV, normally, in most cases, you really take a story and you really let people sink their teeth into it. Now, as far as this show is concerned, I think it's done a great job of just condensing a lot of the comic book material and advancing it without feeling like you are, did I miss something? This shit is going too fast. But that does that. I feel like rarely, if at all, that's happened here. So I'm very happy with what we've got so far. And I think the horror on Storm's face as she saw the events of what happened in Genosha was a nice way to kind of like close that that story loop for her as she has to go back to the team and be probably one of the big leaders, because right now they're down a few folks. So this is kind of an interesting setup to go forward, and I'm excited to see what happens with her and how she interplays back with the team now that she has her powers back.
Okay, but can I bring up something? My actual problem, any problem, yeah. Just like a thing that's stupid, is that just what are the odds that Storm, who happens to be claustrophobic, it's like the magic cactus is on the other side and you have to crawl through a tunnel to get to it.
I mean, it's a bit convenient. It's a bit.
It is. It's just so funny because it's like, oh, it's it just is, and it was just so perfect that it was just, especially because when they mentioned a cactus, I'm like, just throw it a tunnel. It really was like perfect.
So I will say, when I was watching that, I actually thought more, and I don't know, maybe because I'm a woman in my 30s, a suburban mom in my 30s specifically, who was recently introduced to like the whole romance book world. It did read kind of in like the tropes that play along there, where it's like the, oh, this very convenient obstacle that our protagonist has to overcome in order to reach her full power. And okay. So I think that because it's framed in like a romantic way, worked, but it is funky.
It is just funny where it is just like there's this, you have to crawl through this tiny passageway. I don't know. It just, I think that that's kind of like, I'm teasing more than I'm actually criticizing, because like stuff like that is just what happens when you tell stories this quickly, that like there's just not time to explain why there's a tunnel in this cave like that. That's perfectly human sized. But no, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just very tropey, which I enjoy.
and Kevin, I like to ask you, now that it seems like Storm is done with this part of her journey, I'm sure you'd like to see Forge come along with her and join the team a bit, right?
Oh, yeah. Like I told you earlier, like I'm really, first of all, any native character, I'm going to be rooting for him, but like I really enjoy Forge. I like writing comics. And one of the things I mentioned before, I was like, one of my dream things to do would one day do like a 10 issue Forge Tom King style deep dive and just do like a little story with him. And so I would really like to see it. Like, I like that they did clean up a little bit of parts of some of the stuff and how he acted before, but not all the way. And I liked that. Like, it was like still left him, hey, he contributed to this stuff that, you know, ultimately wound up harming Storm that way. That when I say like even earlier about the part being rushed, I felt like some of that could have hit a little harder if you knew like why he did, or you know, all of a sudden Storm loves him too, and you're like, wait, do they have a background before, or how does it kind of interact? I feel like I said, I still am cool with it and everything, but Forge. I really would love to see him continue to do in there. He's actually going to be leading like an X-Force comic here in July as it comes out. And he's going to be upgraded to like Omega level powers, to where he's literally constructing stuff involving like universes and stuff. So like it's upgrading his levels of being able to build and put things together and figure out how to solve to an even higher level. And so I would really be excited, because even in, I thought one thing that was interesting that they did in this scene, whenever she's starting to get her powers, I can't confirm it because I don't know exactly where they were, but do you remember that they're in like a desert, right? And there's like this big thing, there's a thing called Devil's Tower, and it's a sacred site for a lot of different tribes. I mean, it's like up to 38 tribes. It looks very similar.
It definitely felt like they're going for Devil's Tower.
Yeah, and he's Cheyenne, and they're one of the tribes that had considered it to be a sacred site as well. I'm literally taking for my master's a religion and culture class right now, and I'm on a sacred sites unit that we're going over. And so I just thought it was so cool that like this is the area where Storm is kind of like recovering that as well. Mm-hmm. And I loved anytime I could see any movie that shows some version of Native people and Black people combining and helping each other, supporting that way, I'm like, oh man, this is like, and I love that it's Forge kind of supporting her, and they don't have like the, you know, Storm's just supporting him, and she's going to be the one that here's how he got better, and it was built off of her emotional labor and all that kind of stuff. I love that like he's helping her, but he's also hurt and doing this. He's trying to get redemption, and she's just building herself back up, and she's going to be the one that's like, hey, come along with me and and help in this way and to do this. And so I'd be really excited to see more of them. And I think, you know, this series is leaning in big time to the soap opera-ness of X-Men that makes a lot of it, you know, really good. And so I think having them kind of still go on mm-hmm. more and more would be a really good thing to see.
I gotta say, when you mentioned what you would like to see between them more, yeah, like to me, as a true romantic in the sense of the word, you want to see the little moments that the little looks, the little just like little gestures and stuff like that. Kind of reminds me of all the stuff that you saw in the She-Hulk Daredevil episode that kind of like led to what happened with them. The, like that little stuff. You even though mm-hmm. I know it's animation,
yeah.
But I compare it to what happened with Jean and Wolverine in the previous episode where he makes the comment about the sunrise and she blushes and stuff. Yeah, it's just stuff like that, you know, you want to see when it comes to stuff like that. So I appreciate you saying that. So Storm and Forge should be interesting going forward. And the other half of this episode is dedicated to one Charles Xavier. And I gotta say, this guy's a dickhead, man. Buddy, listen. I saw this episode and I just could not believe not only the audacity, the arrogance,
mm-hmm.
the selfishness of all of it. All right, so I want to frame this. Let me start with this part. So the original animated series ends with Charles literally on death's door. He's about to die. 100%. No chance of survival.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Lilandra from the Shi'ar Empire comes, swoops in. Hey, come with me. I'll save you. I'll make sure you're good. And cool, you get this ending that's kind of sad, but you understand it at the same time, and Charles gets to live. This episode, this dude is just so quick to just betray this person who, like, really legitimately loves him. And he could say all he wants about coming back. Oh, well, you know, I got to save my X-Men and I got to be the leader, all this other stuff. Man, this dude is a control freak. This dude is just a straight up control freak. This dude had me so mad watching this entire episode. And there's more that I have for him just generally based off of everything that I saw here. But I want to get y'all in on this. So, Jake, you were kind of being my hype man there for a couple minutes ago.
Yeah. Cause like I think he's like a dickhead even in the opposite way of like he like doesn't commit to either. Cause like if he wants to say like, hey, thank you so much, but like I've dedicated my life to the X-Men, I need to get back. But like he can't. He's so. Cause he's like clearly, you know, really into Lilandra. You know what I mean? Like they clearly got some chemistry going on. You know, absolutely. She's definitely. And you know what? Fair enough. You know, I've never had the pleasure of, you know, spending a night with a Shi'ar woman, so I can't really speak to that. But he clearly enjoys whatever that is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he can't fully say I need to go back to Earth, but at the same time, he does want to go back to Earth, but he can't. Like he's doing both groups dirty. You know what I mean? Just admit absolutely. That you want to go back to see the X-Men, or just admit that you want to, you know, keep getting that sweet Shi'ar. You know, like, just...
That sweet Shi'ar is but just, incredible.
It's just, he just is he's doing that thing that people who are dickheads or don't think they're dickheads do, where they're equivocating, yes. and they're screwing exactly. over both yes. parties. He's being unfair to both Lilandra and the X-Men.
Oh, God. Mm. Cecilia, can I get your perspective on Charles Xavier here? Because am I bugging? Are we bugging here? I want to get your perspective.
I don't know who the fuck Lilandra is going into this episode. So I was like, I don't care about her. You can drop her as far as I'm concerned.
That was my feeling as well. But I didn't want to say that because I know that I'm not, that people know her. So I didn't want to be that guy.
Right.
So I was like, you've got this crazy sister. And no one likes you. Just go back.
Oh my God.
So, and I was kind of, the whole, the Milky Way ghetto? Is that what you're just?
Yeah, Lady Deathler, yo, she was on one. Like, salute to her.
Ghetto.
That's incredible.
I was like, geez Louise, girl. But yeah, so she, I was not like attached to Lilandra. I also have complicated feelings about Xavier. I find him, to your point about being controlling, he's way too possessive over the X-Men to the very like syntax that he uses. He's like, to me, my X-Men. Like his language about them is like very, very possessive. It's like, bro, chill out. So it's tough because we're like, we think he's dead. He shows up. It's a weird kind of like, oh, this episode started and there's just like pew pew guns and men in purple underwear and weird.
Oh, there should be, all right, just to set the stage for you.
So I don't know what's going on.
You know what's going on. Shi'ar Empire, they appeared in the original animated series during the Phoenix Saga. You got Lady Deathbird. We get a surprise appearance from Ronan the Accuser. That was cool. Gladiator, the super strong dude, kind of got the Superman like powers, and a dude named Vulcan, who happens to be Scott Summers' youngest brother, the third Summers brother. So you got all those folks in there just off the bat. So that's who those folks are. They're alien race. I think what are they like? They, Kevin, they're like some avian folks, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Shi'ar Empire, they're an interesting bunch, and yeah, they tangle with the X-Men plenty of times. And Lady Deathbird, I remember playing against her as a boss in one of the original X-Men games, the Sega Genesis, back in the day. So that was cool to see her once again. And yeah, like the Xavier thing is very tough for me because, so I mentioned the Lilandra side, and the Lilandra side, obviously she sticks her neck out for him and saves him and all that stuff. And he's just willing to throw it all away. But also at the same time, the X-Men side. So this guy leaves Magneto in charge, somebody who, while being his friend, he's been basically at war with for years and years and years and years and years and years. He don't want to give leadership to Cyclops. He don't want to give leadership to Jean Grey or any of the folks who were his students. Which, I mean, whatever decision you want to call it, whether it's a good one or a bad one, I mean...
You know what, can I make a historical comparison? This is what it reminds me of as you're speaking. It's, I think, probably the single worst decision in the history of American politics is when, after his original vice president passed away, or he didn't pass away, maybe he replaced him, but Abraham Lincoln replaced his vice president with Andrew Johnson, who was of Democrat and was against him, basically, but they were friendly enough because he didn't leave during the Civil War, and as a reward for that, he's like, you know what, I'll make you my vice president, even though we don't see eye on anything, we agree on this one thing. And then when Abraham Lincoln died, of course, that basically ended Reconstruction in most ways, and it was one of the worst things that ever happened. And that's what I feel like is here, where it's like, oh, Magneto, we disagree on everything, but you're nice to me enough, so I'm going to make you the leader. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, if someone's nice to you on just one thing, you like maybe like give them a gift basket. You don't give them leadership roles. Like, stop it. It was just a super disaster. So what I'm saying here is that Charles Xavier is Abraham Lincoln, and Magneto is Andrew Johnson. Honestly, I can live with that. I can live with that. That's fine. That's fine.
I would still say as a forever since I was a kid, met Team Magneto guy, I would say it's like a reverse of that, though, for me. Because I'm like, oh.
Fair enough.
Out of the way, Magneto's here? All right, let's go.
the metaphor doesn't really work once we go into the actual ideologies of them.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, though. Yeah. The logic of it is like,
what? I understand. I realize it falls apart, mostly because, like, Andrew Johnson was not actually someone real. He was just a freaking drunk who was racist. But, like, yeah, I think that... I mean, yes, but like, he was a drunk who was racist in 1866. It was like, wow, man, this guy's too drunk and too racist. But no, yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Sorry, AC, just had to quickly. Honestly, we got 20 something minutes in and we didn't derail it, and I felt kind of itchy.
Totally fine. Totally fine. I totally understand. Kevin, can I ask you, like, just from your perspective, Charles Xavier in this episode as we see him, and the Shi'ar Empire, Deathbird in particular, are like, hey, you want this dude to be an emperor of our people? This dude? And obviously it's clear they don't trust him. And the way that Deathbird kind of talks down to him as he's this lower form of Terran. The way that she describes it is just tremendous. And there is the scenario that Charles has to erase his own memory and the memory of his X-Men in order to complete this process, in order to not only wed Lilandra, but be to rule alongside her. So considering all of those things that are laid out there, what were your thoughts on Charles just generally in this episode? Because I find myself dumbfounded about how irritated I was with him.
I had such a weird mix. It was almost really good for me on certain parts. Like whenever, I thought it was really weird how he just randomly is like Mr. Feeny is like, let's go to class. And that was funny. They go to the astro plane that way. I feel like they just jumped into it because they're like, there's no way to ease into this looking not weird. And so they just like, oh, screw it. We're just in here. And when that part with the content he was talking about in regards to assimilation.
Yeah, that was
in regards to erasing your identity for the goal of the. I was like, oh man, this is stuff that previous X-Men would have thought would have been Magneto stuff saying. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, that part was really good. The rest, kind of very similar to what you said earlier, that he was just kind of, if he was very, here are my values, here's what I'm committed to. I just got to stick here and do this thing, and I'm sorry, I know you did this. Whoever he was talking to, and he was driven by what those were, I would have understood it more. Or if, like you said, Lilandra in the comics, again, it's a longer thing. They love each other. It benefits the X-Men a huge amount later on, to the point where they even get resources to resurrect and stuff like that later. Like, they get tech from the Shi'ar and all this stuff. It's like a really helpful relationship. But we don't know that. We just hop into this just like, oh, okay, all of a sudden, here's his X-Men, as you said, and then there's this lady here who I'm assuming he loves, but we haven't been able to build on it or even see a little bit of interplay. We didn't get to see like a 5-minute scene of them eating alien ice cream and just kind of, oh, they're cute together, or you know what I mean? Like, we didn't get to see those kind of things, because for us, we're like, oh, well, whatever, just go back to the X-Men, dude. Yeah. Magneto's gone, Gambit's gone. Like, what are we talking about?
Even though it's a cartoon, and I can say this because the energy is not there with, like, you know, Scott and Jean and Logan. It's like, this Charles Xavier, just, he does not seem like a dude who has sex. Like, I just don't believe that he does not have that. And I think that I joke, but I also think that, like, it kind of is a miscalculation. The way that he plays the scenes with him and Lilandra, I think is, like, actually, I think if they were to make him be more sensitive and more, you know, romantic in those scenes, to be like, oh my God, this is really a connection, because he's normally not like this at all. He's normally, you know, he's not. And I think that, whereas it seems like he's basically just having the same, he's very intellectual when he's talking to her. And like, you want her to break down his walls in a way where you're like, oh my God, if she can get him to open up like this, then I understand why he's willing to throw away the X-Men for her.
Right.
But no, we don't really get that. Sorry for interrupting you, Kevin.
No, I agree. It's Professor X, not Professor Sex. It definitely is very clear. that was the only part that it didn't quite bring us into feeling that conflict. Like, we just kind of see it. It's kind of like Cecilia mentioned earlier, which I thought was awesome, because it's a Scott McCloud reference to about the gutter, the in-between, what our imagination fills in with comics, and that's what makes them a special medium. And with animation, what they've done so well is using the visual along with the words and with the music. And I feel like on that part, they could have made that tension and that like conflict just a little bit more conflicty. You know, it didn't feel, to me, it was like, dude, come on, like, you're Professor X. We haven't even seen you over here. I know something happened and she saved you, but that almost partly feels a little worse, because the only thing we mostly know about it is that she saved him. And so you would think, oh, well, she saved him, so then he should be with her. And then he's still like, well,
nah, but that bothers me though. Like, she really saved his life. Like, really, like, stuck her neck out and saved his life. And he's like, you know what? I don't know. And even with the whole, like, and, you know, they traded I love yous and stuff and kissed and whatnot. And there seems to be some type of romantic connection to a degree with them. But it didn't take much. And like I said, it ain't the whole, like, oh, I'm going back because I love my X-Men and stuff. Nah, man, this dude ran out of a place that ran out of something that he could control, because now he's going to be stuck with this emperor thing, and I'm going to be a part of the Shi'ar Empire. I'm going to be dragged along. It's like when your wife tells you got to go to the store with her and all this other stuff. Everybody's been there. If you're married, anybody married listening to the show right now, you know what time it is as far as that's concerned. So Charles was looking and saw a life that I don't know if he really wanted. So then he was like, oh, you know what? I got to save my X-Men. But no, in fact, I want that control back. That's what he wanted. And that's what he went out of his way to go get.
And I think that because, like, if you hadn't watched the series, you know, from years ago, and right. if you weren't familiar with it, it's hard to figure out what his motivations are in this episode. Like, you jump in, you're like, you're wearing this Voldemort-looking helmet, you take it off, it's the big reveal. Henry, even, who's 7 years old, I was like, oh, we thought he was dead. And Henry was like, I didn't. And so, like, we all kind of knew it was coming. But I just, like, could not figure him out. I was like, I don't know why we're here. I don't know who this lady is. I don't know what's going on. And so the motivations behind him were just unclear. And so I could step into that mindset of, like, the rules are not being defined to me, so I just got to read the situation, figure out for myself. But I think that, yeah, it just made me ambivalent. I was like, I don't really care. I just want you to get to where you're going next, because I just watched Gambit die last week, and now I'm, like, still sitting with those emotions, and I'm watching this weird dude do weird things.
Well, Cecilia, here's what I read. Here's what I read. I read when, of course, he's class is in session. He's telling all them folks about the assimilationists, as Kevin alluded to. And then he has the visions of you know, the Sentinel attack. And then Gambit appears. And then he's like, oh, shit, Gambit's dead. And then he started talking about, oh, they having wine. They making love. And I was like, wait a minute. Hold on. Time out. This guy is a cuck. This guy's fucking mentally with the psychic powers now? Is that what we're doing?
This is a really rich text when it comes to people using superpowers to cuck.
So firstly, last week we got Magneto, who you can make the argument was out here grooming folks.
And we did last week extensively.
And we spent a lot of time on that. If you didn't listen, go check that out. Now this week, we got Mr. Cuck Creepy over here talking about Gambit making love and all this other stuff. And it's like, my guy.
The heterosexuals are not well in this entire series so far. They're unwell.
I mean, I would say that everyone's unwell. I don't think that Morph is doing too great.
Well, Morph is just showing up occasionally for narrative purposes.
So Magneto and Professor Xavier, who are supposed to be leaders, supposed to be the people that you look to lead, are doing this type of creepy, freaky shit?
It's like no then one... Cyclops, apparently, is the other possibility.
And then Cyclops...
And they're one bad Reddit page away from joining a neo-Nazi like militia or something.
Oh my god! And then on top of that, his lady is doing the Kool-Aid Man in his head and finding him with the Madeline Pryor.
Of all things, they're sitting on a bed, like they can't just be anywhere else or anything. They're just right there and. Yeah.
If I knew that there was this much action going on in the astral plane, I would have spent a lot of time learning to astral project when I was a kid. I didn't know that there was so much going on.
You gotta be kidding me, man. Like, I have to admit, when this show was coming out, I did not know. The original animated show wasn't doing this. Like, it wasn't doing this at all. We are really getting into the mess. And the soap opera drama that, listen, don't get me wrong, it's fire. I love it from week to week because it's really entertaining. But also at the same time, Professor Xavier, you are a dickhead. Magneto, you are a creepy, creepy dude. Like, how are we gonna look at these dudes as the leaders to lead the future, the children of the atom, as Charles says in this episode.
Magneto is pulling a Chelsea Blackwell in the recent season of Love Is Blind, and definitely lying about his looks on the other side of the pod there. So there's a bunch going on.
there is plenty going on, and I think to keep it 100 as far as like where the rest of this series and the season goes, as there is going to be a season two, everything points towards Genosha. Everything points towards what is to come, what follows. Now that Charles is headed back, how are the rest of the X-Men going to react to that? I would suspect that Scott Summers might have a little bit of a problem with him showing up as he does. Absolutely. Especially with him leaving leadership to Magneto and leaving the X-Men high and dry, even though we get at the time what it was for. I think there's Kevin, I want to get your feelings on the Scott and Charles relationship, as I'm sure Scott thought of himself as, you know, Professor X's best student, somebody that Professor X would look to lead the X-Men into the future. And that decision that he makes to have Magneto be that guy is probably a tough one. So then for the professor to show up, especially with all of the X-Men, we've heard the dialogue throughout the first couple of episodes that they think he's dead. So with him showing up again, that's got to be a shock to Scott. What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, what I'm really, really, really hoping is that they have Scott go into like the new X-Men Grant Morrison run in the 2000s. Scott becomes very revolutionary. There's some of the coolest panels are like, sometimes people share them online where you see Captain America coming and he's pressing Captain America saying, oh, y'all didn't come when we were getting murdered and this was going on.
Yeah. Avengers versus X-Men.
Yeah. And Captain America's shield popped up. So I'm like, I can see this, some things happening again that way, but like, Scott becomes kind of a rebel towards the X-Men in a lot of ways, or literally becomes a rebel towards them and an outlaw. And then it mixes in his anger and a lot of stuff going on also with some of the Phoenix, and he gets empowered with that. And then stuff happens with him and Professor X, and the suit he has is my favorite suit. 'Cause usually Scott's always pretty dorky and like weird or whatever. But like in this run, it was a really good, like, example of some people, I mean, I think it's a, kind of not a lazy comparison, but they say like it's like Professor X and Magneto's child, almost like combining kind of the Magneto strength of Revolution without just simply saying you're necessarily superior, but saying all this let's get along hasn't been working for 50 years. I don't need to necessarily kill you all to survive, but we don't need to just, you know, sing kumbaya either. And even the other heroes, y'all keep wanting to come and say you're helping us, but y'all don't come unless y'all want something to help with. Right. You don't come around whenever other things are going on with us. And, you know, a lot of stuff like that. So I'm really hoping it gets into some of that. And I think they've set up Scott to be, I mean, even just the first couple of episodes, he, in a general cool sense, he looked a lot cooler than he already ever has almost on TV.
Yeah. So,
like the fact that he was like using his stuff, like sliding around, moonwalk fighting, the fact that he's like hitting the ground with that superhero land by doing that. I was like, they made him not seem as Boy Scouty in a way. And so I hope it kind of does some of that progress, because one of my biggest issues with a lot of like storytelling within the Marvel, the MCU world, is whenever there are people who are revolutionary or talking about how the social order exists, they really neuter it by having those people just kill innocent people so that you can easily say, well, yeah, we shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm really hoping they give a good nuanced
version. Shout out to Carly Morgenthau.
Where you have to really sit with what he's saying, and you can't dismiss it because he just randomly kills everybody, you know, or I'm going to drown the whole world, or, you know, whatever it is, that you actually have to sit with something he's saying that's like, hey, the current existing social order is actually very violent to us. So even any instance of violence we might do is still minuscule compared to what's existing already that everyone's cool with. I know it's a lot, but like that part gets me.
No.
I think some of it's aiming towards that a little bit.
Yeah, no, I feel you on that, especially with what we saw from Scott last week
Oh, yeah.
and his interaction with that reporter and the way that he kind of went off on her kind of like hinted at what that could potentially look like. I actually like that idea. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the end of this episode, which we see Mr. Trask being approached by the gentleman who is truly involved in the Sentinel attack, which was one Mr. Sinister. And this is setting the stage for what the last four episodes will look like this season, as I'm sure there will be Mr. Sinister trying to do whatever genetic mutation stuff that he's trying to do. I don't know what he's up to, but I'm very intrigued to see what is next. Jake, in your opinion, as far as what you, how this episode ends and where you see this going, what's the most interesting thing about this plot that you're looking forward
to? So, without the context of Mr. Sinister and all that, and Trask and whatnot, like, I didn't get much out of that last scene. The thing I'm most interested in, though, is Professor X coming home and what that means. And I think that he doesn't, because he's a dickhead,
yes,
he has not considered how pissed everyone is going to be at him for leaving, because, like, he... You know, he left things in a pretty bad shape, and in some regard, you could... you could say... Obviously, the terrorist attack on Genosha was going to happen, but, like, a lot of bad things that have happened are because Magneto was the head of the X-Men. And not to say that Professor X would prevent it, but it's like, dude, you weren't here. Like, how are you, you know? And so, especially because, like, you know damn well that if any other X-Men were to make the decisions that Charles did... Charles would have some speech of like, you cannot abandon your family when things get tough, you know? It's like, he's just being a hypocrite. So I want to see how that plays out, both from a like emotional level and also like what happens with him and Magneto. Like, does Magneto not want to relinquish control? Does it, you know, obviously, you know, there's going to be some type of disagreement there, but that's what's interesting to me the most, because Xavier's been off the board, but now that he's back on the board, I think this is the right time where we've had enough time seeing what happens when he's not there to see the ramifications of what happens when he comes back.
100%. Cecilia, how about you, as you know, as far as where this series is going, in your opinion, what do you look forward to? What interests you about? I think some of the stuff that Kevin just mentioned was very interesting as far as Cyclops is concerned. I like that stuff. And you still have the, you know, the overarching themes of what's happening with also Jean and Wolverine and the rest of the crew. So it'll be, and then you bring Storm back into the fold. How is she going to feel about everything that's going on? It's really a nice little pot brewing here. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, there's so much going on that it's hard to pick. This episode I was a little bit disappointed, only because there was, you know, the week before when Gambit died and Rogue kind of having to deal, like, she's kind of left. The final moment is her kind of dealing with the fact that he's gone. And that was, I need something on that ASAP. And so I'm looking forward to that. The Jean Grey, Madeline Pryor stuff, that one threw me for such a loop. I was like, this is the biggest mindfuck, and they're just going to have this be like one of five plots. I think that the biggest thing about this whole series so far, and again, because I'm not as versed in the X-Men world, I was like,
right,
there's like five catastrophes happening at the same time. How am I supposed to choose which one to prioritize? I'm just going with my heart. And right now my heart is saying Gambit died. And also Madeline Pryor had a baby that is now in a different time. I don't know. There's so much going on. I'm glad that we saw Storm's moment this week, because I was also nervous that was going to be put off for too long. I was happy to see that. And I hope that we get, Rogue and Jean's moments soon. That's what I'm going to need to look forward to. Xavier could have stayed dead, in my opinion. I was like, everyone else is more interesting. Xavier is kind of a shithead.
You could take the kind of out of it for me.
I don't really. Kind of he's cocky. God. He's so cocky. He has this, I don't know. He gives me the ick. And he just, every time someone's like, you know, you did this wrong. And he's like, actually, and he steps into like this 18th century philosopher mindset where he's like, I actually figured out the secrets of the universe while I was taking a bath the other night and took some opioids. Anyway, Xavier irritates me, so.
I mean, listen, the arrogance of him to just say, hey, man, I'm going to leave Magneto in charge and everything's going to go all right.
I need an answer to that. I need an answer to that. What was that?
Like, come on, bro. Like, come on, bro. You got to be serious with me right now. But,
was it an accident? Was there collusion with the friend who read the will or whatever? I don't understand.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions that I hope that meeting that Charles has with the X-Men will take place, and I hope they read him the Riot Act. Charles Xavier needs to step forward to the congregation and answer for his actions, please. I think it's very important. Yeah,
go ahead. I will say to that, just really briefly, so like we're talking about, I'm like, there's like 100 different things going on. I don't understand.
Of course, yeah.
But then watching with the kids, and then Henry has been watching through like a bunch of the old Spider-Man animated series. He's watching a bunch of animated series, and I've been
Spider-Man, the whole Spider-Man joint. Oh my God, yeah.
They're all so good. Mm-hmm. But I've been paying attention more to animated series Moses storytelling, and they are different, and with the X-Men in particular, because there's like 500 characters and they all have these weird relationships that get intermeshed at different periods. And the watching this with the kids is grounding, because they're not looking at this like, what's going on? They're just kind of like taking the things on the screen and being like, so this is what is there.
Right.
And I guess we'll get answers when we're given answers. Like, it's a very interesting thing to kind of, when I am spiraling out of like, what's going to happen? How's this happening? And I'm like doing the whole, you know, crazy yarn corkboard situation. And I look over at the kids and they're just like, yeah, sure, this is happening now. And so it's a helpful thing, because this is a lot, so.
No, I mean, I even think of myself watching the animated series as a kid and seeing Beast in prison, and they're fighting the Juggernaut, and there's like a prison break, and Beast staying in jail. And I just remember being like, wait a minute, why isn't Beast going with Rogue and Storm? And nah, he's like, nah, I gotta stay for this trial.
He's like, no, I have to prove that we're... And right. They're like, we don't care.
Right, and I was like, yo, where are you doing? And then obviously now, you know, being older and understanding like the whole situation, it puts a nice perspective. So yeah, as a kid, you just take things as they are. And you just are here for the lights and the enjoyment and the action and everything else. And then the substance comes in later. And, you know, I just want to say again, like, this show has a lot of substance. It really is incredible that we've gotten something like this to this point, where so far I have not had any like real issue with the way that the episodes have been constructed. I think the writing is tremendous, and just the production value overall has been, you know, pretty damn good. And I look forward to seeing how this concludes. I mean, in terms of what you guys were saying, like overall, I think there's something to be said for not only the, you know, the X-Men themselves trying to deal with stuff. I mean, we see Nightcrawler in the opening credits. How is he going to be included in this mix now? If he's going to be a main X-Man, is Magneto really, really dead? Because we ain't seen no body yet. So that's the next part of the story that you want to see what happens, how that continues. And yeah, I mean, Kevin, you mentioned the whole other heroes getting involved. I know there are other heroes that are supposed to appear in this series. What are those conversations going to be like? How will the X-Men react to that? The real life comparison tragedy with Genosha, with other things that we've seen in the real world. How do they translate that from an animated standpoint? I'm fascinated to see how they tell that story. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens there. Does anybody have any particular final thoughts that they want to give? Kevin, do you have anything else? Cecilia or Jake? Because if not, then we can wrap this puppy up.
No, I don't think so.
All right. All right. So, yes, we look forward to seeing what happens next on X-Men 97 as we round second base going to third as we get ready to close this thing out. It's looking forward to seeing what happens. Want to thank our guests for joining us, Cecilia and Kevin. First, Kevin, thank you once again for being on the show. Where can we follow you? Where can we find your work?
My name's Kevin Chukalay. It's like chocolate, but with U's instead of O's. It's the easiest way to spell it. That name's kind of unique. That's the only one I have for Twitter, Instagram. You can find me on there. Probably won't approve you on Facebook because I'm not even on there anyways. But on there I write for a site called A Tribe Called Geek. It has to do with natives and pop culture. And we write a lot of stuff on comics, movies, horror, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, you can find me on there.
Appreciate you, sir. And Cecilia, where can we follow you?
You can find me various places, Instagram, Twitter, etc. Cecilia, Cecelia, M. Stokes. You find me. There's not a lot of Cecilia Stokes out there, so you can just kind of Google that. And then hopefully before too long, I will be getting some more academic articles out there. So those you have to pay for, but maybe I can find ways to make them accessible.
We just need you to finish up grad school so we can say that we have a PhD on the show. I think it's a thing because we really need to balance out some of the dumb bits we do.
I have two masters, if that helps.
Does help. That's respectable.
I'm over here happy about my one I'm about to get, you know?
Yeah, I just have a bachelor's degree and it's from art school, so that barely counts.
Yeah, but at Tisch?
Yeah. I know, but yeah. I was trying to self-deprecate.
Fancy.
Yeah.
Cecilia, appreciate you for joining us once again. And of course, being on the Discord and being our general pal, we appreciate you as always. And Jake, where can we follow you, sir?
You can follow me at the Jake Christie and listen to my other podcast, Love at First Psych. Me and Andre Barrera talking about psych. We're slowing down a little bit because Andre's in Japan, so we're only doing one episode a week because I saved up some. But once he's back, we'll be back to two episodes a week.
Well, there you go. Check that out. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at AnthonyCanton_3. Follow the show at MC University Pod on all platforms. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. 5-star us on all platforms as well for the audio version, Apple and Spotify, all those things. Make sure you subscribe. Patreon.com/MCUniversityPod where you can get our bonus content, such as the subscriber mailbag that we released last week. We do those every month. And of course, the Mission Impossible series that we are currently in the midst of doing, Ghost Protocol, is next on the docket. And of course, $3 to get in to general, get our back catalog of all them episodes and get into the Discord, and $8 for an Avengers level tier that gets you some other nice perks. So appreciate everybody for listening and supporting and watching. For Cecilia and Kevin and Jake, I am Anthony Canton III. This has been Marvel Cinematic University. We will talk to you next time.